Well, all right then, 5 p.m. 90.3 WHPC, also WHPC HD, time for American Hit Radio. Thanks so much for tuning in, joining us. Glad to have you aboard. As you may know, on Wednesdays, what we do is we take a very long, hard look at albums. We've been doing this for quite a while now, but basically just about a decade. And we have two lists. We're trying to cover in all 1,000 albums. We have two lists of 500. The alternative top 40, which is how this whole thing started, by picking 500 albums that never made the top 40. I thought it would be a cool thing to, like, you know, basically play albums that maybe a lot of our listeners wouldn't know. But then it seemed to make a lot more sense to fill it in with another 500 of albums that did make the top 40, because it helps to provide some, a balance to what was actually happening in real time. So we've been playing them in chronological order. We started in 1955. We're working our way up to somewhere more or less toward the present. I might have to be reworking that depending on how many years it takes for us to get to the end. But we are right now, if we're talking about the top 500 of the top 40, and today that is what we will be talking about, we're up to number 252 of the 500. So we're already on the other side on this list. And it's an album that is celebrating its 50th anniversary, because, and as many of the albums that we will be doing in for the next few weeks, maybe even months, because there's a lot of great music that came out in 1975 that we have to cover, and a few that we've already have covered in the past few months behind us. August 1975, this album reached number 3, and it was a huge breath of relief for the artist who created the album. His name is Bruce Springsteen, of course. The album is Born to Run. This is Springsteen's third album, and it's really hard to even begin to you cannot overestimate or exaggerate the amount of anxiety that Springsteen felt when he was creating this album, because it was pretty much known that Columbia, although the critics loved his first two albums, they didn't sell well. They really didn't sell much outside of the tri-state area. Springsteen did not have national reach, so Columbia wasn't really that interested in an artist who wasn't going to have national reach, and they basically gave him a warning saying, yeah, this is it. If the next album doesn't sell, we're dropping you. So it set him to a task that was almost monumental. To the point where, I have interesting thoughts about the album, and I don't know if everybody would agree with me, but to me, Born to Run is a remarkable album, no doubt about that. But it somehow survives a few serious contradictions about it. Like, the album, by definition, implies an aura of freedom, Born to Run. But the overall mood is almost claustrophobic. It has the feel of an expansive rock and roll record, but the arrangements are so tight that they leave no room for expansion. It really couldn't get any bigger. Everything is already as big as it can possibly be, to the point where attentive listeners end up getting caught up in its tension. Freedom is the ideal, but frustration runs rampant on this album. It's an album about frustration. Obsession and passion are the drivers for every syllable that Springsteen sings, and yet the net results are frustration and failure in the themes of the songs. Not all of them, but a good number, where your efforts lead to nowhere and you wind up, as he sings in one song, quote, wounded, not even dead. The intense arrangements create a vacuum that sucks all of the oxygen from the room, but the songs are so strong and identifiable that listeners can envision themselves as being part of the script. The world is a ruthless place. And what makes Born to Run so magnificent is that it offers the listener a means of survival in a world where your best efforts will likely fail, but you can at least feel better knowing that you tried and that you aren't alone. Springsteen had made a tremendous amount of fans with this album for that exact reason. It's not because he was trying to pretend to be something. He was coming off as being extraordinarily real and being himself. And this album was almost tearing him apart. He was ready to throw the whole album away at one point. He was so frustrated with what was happening. And the title track alone took something like 1 year to do the one song over and over and over again. But we'll get to that when we get to the title song. Right now, what we've got is the opening track, and I think it speaks for itself. The album starts again. Both sides start with this sense of breaking away, the longing for freedom, and the outside chance that maybe, just maybe, you'll be able to break away from the same old, and get out of the place that's holding you down and maybe find some happiness and freedom, whether it's on the road, in a car, getting away somehow from everything that is holding you back. And the opening song is beautiful for that. Here's Thunder Road.
Screen door slams, Mary's dress waves. Like a vision, she dances across the porch as the radio plays. Roy Orbison singing for the lonely. Hey, that's me and I want you only. Don't turn me home again, I just can't face myself. Inside, darling, you know just what I'm here for. So you're scared and you're thinking that maybe we ain't that young anymore. Show a little faith, there's magic in the night. You ain't a beauty, but hey, you're alright. Oh, and that's alright with me. You can hide your covers and study your pain.
they were working on that song. It was originally called Wings for Wheels. Eventually, they settled on Thunder Road, I think for obvious reasons, considering that that's where the chorus takes you. A great way to start an album. Basically, already there's motion. You know, we're going somewhere. And this next track is probably one of the more, actually, I think it is by far the most fun song on the album. 10th Avenue Freeze Out is pretty much a biography. It's Springsteen talking about the band and how the band is such an important part of his life, and how it's definitely super joyous. And it's about as happy as you're ever going to find any of the songs on this album. Basically, it's about the struggle of how they got to where they are, celebrating the fact that they are still there in the first place. And you'll even hear, like, they'll talk about the big man, you know, basically comes into the band, which is, of course, when he brings that in around the third verse, it becomes very obvious that it's sort of an autobiographical tune about the E Street Band. And it's called 10th Avenue Freeze Out. It's always great to hear that on the radio, even if it's on my show, maybe especially if it's on my show. 10th Avenue Freeze Out. That's Randy and Michael Brecker, by the way, playing the horns. They were on so many albums in the 70s. Springsteen hired them to come in. And the thing is, they came in to do that song, and they never sat down to write horn parts for them. They never had a chart. So they were like, what are we going to do? Steve Van Zandt happened to be in the studio, and he gave them a head arrangement telling them what he wanted them to do, like on the spot. He had it in his head, and it was like just that's the reason why he ended up being a band member. Because of that moment with him directing the Brecker Brothers on the horn, Springsteen said, you got to join the band. And sure enough, that's how Steve Van Zandt became a member of the E Street Band. How about that? All right, so the next song is a theme that Springsteen goes to an awful lot, which is the difficulties of living a working class life and the problems that you have and the need for escapism when you're being downtrodden, when you feel as though the man is pushing you down. And a lot of times he resorts to racing in the streets or street, you know, basically racing cars. That's, again, it's a theme that he comes up with over and over again. And this is, I think, the first time that it became quite obvious that it was going to become a recurrent theme. The song is called Night. With that, this is a very interesting segue because the next track that's up is called Backstreets. And I have to admit, there's one thing about the song that always drove me crazy. And it's when it gets toward the end of the song, when he starts repeating the title line, hiding in the backstreets, hiding in the backstreets. I have to count how many times he says it because I don't know. But I know that after a while, my brain starts to melt every single time I hear it. So maybe I'll count it this time. It's a song basically, again, about escapism, about him and a friend named Terry. Now, I don't know if Terry is a male partner or a female lover, or maybe both. It's not really explained one way or the other, male or female. But again, it's about that sense of escape falling apart and things not going out quite the way you'd expected. As you will know by the end of this time the song is over, this song is called Backstreets.
Thank you.
Yeah, for what it's worth, the number is 32. He says, "Hiding on the Backstreet's 30." In the song, he says it 32 times. But the thing is, at the ending of it, where he repeats it endlessly, that's 26 times right there. That's a lot. All right. I want to mention, first of all, you're listening to 90.3 WHPC, WHPC HD. The show is American Hit Radio, and I'm your host, Tom Ryan, with my lovely wife co-host, Heidi Morales, Ryan running the boards. And we're here every Wednesday and Friday between 5 and 6 p.m. if you're interested. I hope you are. It's great to have you around. It's nice to know that there's somebody listening. So I'd also want to mention that there's a guy named Peter Ames Carlin. He wrote a biography on Bruce a while back called Bruce, and he just put out another book, I think yesterday. It just hit the streets, and it's called Tonight in Jungleland, The Making of Born to Run, an entire book basically about this album that we are playing. So what you're getting from me are tiny little snippets. If you really want to get the whole story, I highly recommend that you check out the book by Peter Ames Carlin, who obviously knows his stuff around Springsteen. And if you want to get an entire book's worth of information, because I'm just going to give, like I said, Cliff Notes versions, but we're at the point where we get to the title song. And it's a big deal that it comes up where it does right now, because this came out in 1975, which was vinyl. And you're talking about a point now where you would have to flip the record to hear Born to Run. Now, you're thinking about the way that the last side just went, with Night being a song about frustration, and then Hiding on the Back Streets about trying to basically break away, and then you almost have to flip the record to hear Born to Run, because it basically takes, that's the next step of the story. But it almost never happened, because the management at Columbia were really getting ready to cut Springsteen. In fact, they were sort of like weighing the difference between who they should put more investment into, Springsteen or Billy Joel. And they were leaning very, very heavily toward Billy Joel as being the person that they would promote and put that money to him rather than Springsteen, because they didn't really see that they were getting much return from Springsteen based on the first two albums. So this is where he ends up getting unbelievably stressed. Now, they even suggest that, you know, that maybe he should go to Nashville, Tennessee with session musicians. Forget the E Street Band. We want them to work with pros. And he's like, no way. I mean, he had to really stand up for himself. But when you have people saying, we're about to drop you, and here's what we suggest, and you say, no, I'm not going to do it that way, then you better come up with something better. So he was more or less riding upon his own instinct, his own judgment, and it all could have fallen apart. It could have gone really bad. And the one song that he knew that he had was Born to Run. But he had been working on this thing for something like 6 months, nonstop. And like, you know, by January of 1975, after an entire year, that was the only track that was finished. It was really nuts. And band members left. Two of the members of the band left while they were recording the song. So he had to replace them. So that didn't help things at all. And he's bringing in synthesizers, horns, piano, organ, glockenspiel. He has backing vocalists on the track. Springsteen himself said that the last song, the final take that we hear, had 72 different musical tracks on it, all pressed down onto 16 tracks on the mixing board, which means once you mix them together, you can't unmix them. So it becomes really, really scary and heavy when you're doing something like that, because you can imagine the pressure that he's under. And if he makes a mistake, it's go back to the start, go start all over again. Because if you put something on top of 5 other tracks and it ends up being a mess, you lose those other tracks because you're making room to put other things on them. And you've only got 16. So when you start layering things on top of one another, things get lost. And I think it's a bit of a miracle that it worked out for him the way that it did. And like I said, 50th anniversary, it's a big deal. And if you want to check it out, the name of that book is called Tonight in Jungleland, The Making of Born to Run. Here is the song that you've been waiting to hear. He's born to run. We'll be right back. It still is such an immense song, isn't it? The song will never die. It's something that's like perfect about it, but you couldn't add even one more thing to it. It might have broken it if you did. So it just got to that point. Now, the next track, this is where I began to go over reached the breaking point myself with Springsteen. And it was around 1975, and I listened to WNEW a lot. That was 102.7 on the dial, and it was a great FM station for years. And they were obsessed with Springsteen. They played his music a lot. Dave Herman in the morning would always play his quote-unquote morning Bruce Juice, which had disgusting connotations to me. It always made me feel weird every time he said it. But him, Scott Muni, you'd hear Springsteen pretty much once an hour on WNEW. He got that much airplay around this time. And then after a while, it was almost like a little bit too much. And I found myself beginning to like pull away from it, saying, oh, this is over the top. But one song that became my obsession is this next song, She's the One. It's a song about obsession. And it's got that Bo Diddley beat thing happening. And I just thought that this was, it should have been the next single. It should have been as big as Born to Run in my mind. It's just a great song about maybe loving the wrong person a little bit too much. It's called She's the One.
With a few love graces and the secret places that no
Because when she dreams, won't suffer in them blue sails.
That is such an awesome song. Two songs back to back that are like beyond awesome. Between the title track, Born to Run, and of course, that was She's the One. Now, the album takes an amazing turn right here. It's a song that almost sounds as though it's on the wrong album. It's out of place almost. It has a jazz feel, and this ambiance, like it's a visual song. Like it could be part of a movie, and it does tell a story. But even though the music is different from everything else, it's thematically perfect for what has been set up. Because after all of the talk about escapism and the running, it's with this song that the desperation takes hold. We don't know how it turns out. Springsteen doesn't give us the ending of the story, but it doesn't sound like it was going to work out too well. It's desperation taken to the point of criminality. And, obviously, it just kind of leaves you hanging with that uneasy feeling. It's called Meeting Across the River.
Can you get us a ride? Gotta make it through the tunnel. Got a meeting with a man on the other side. Hey, this guy, he's the real thing. So if you wanna come along, you gotta promise you won't say anything. 'Cause this guy don't dance. Been past, this is our last chance. We gotta stay cool tonight, Eddie, 'cause man, we got ourselves out on that line. And if we blow this one, they ain't gonna be looking for just me this time. In your pocket, it'll look like you're carrying a friend. And remember, just don't smile, change the shirt. 'Cause tonight we got style. Cherry says she's gonna walk, 'cause she found I took the radio and hocked it. But Eddie, man, she don't understand that $2,000's practically sitting here in my pocket. Tonight's gonna be everything that I said. And when I walk through that door, I'm just gonna throw that money on the bed. She'll see this time I wasn't just talking. Then I'm gonna go out walking. Hey, Eddie, can you catch us around?
I'm just doing this now because the next track where we're going is sort of part two, to me, in my mind, of Meeting Across the River. It might even be the same characters in a way. It's still about escapism, but this time it really, really does feel claustrophobic because it kind of says escapism is just another trap. Maybe it's even a lie. I want you to decide for yourself. It's a big opus ending. It's called Jungle Land. Thank you so much for listening, folks. We'll see you next week. Take care.
Petrovich slick machine over the Jersey state line. Barefoot girl sitting on the hood of a Dodge, drinking warm beer in the soft summer rain. The rat pulls in the town, rolls up his pants. Together they take a stab at romance and disappear down Flamingo Lane. Will a maximum lawman run down Flamingo chasing a rat in a barefoot girl? The kids around here look just like shadows.
Midnight gangs assemble and pick
the city, two hearts beat. Soul engines running through a night so tender. In a bedroom locked, in whispers of soft refusal, and then surrender. In the tunnels uptown, the rats on dream guns him down. The shots echo down them hallways in the night. No one watches, and the ambulance pulls away. Where's the girl shuts out the bedroom light? Outside the streets on fire, in a real death waltz, between what's flesh and what's fantasy. Man, the poets down here don't write nothing at all, they just stand back and let it all be. And in the thrill of the night, they reach for their moment and try to make an honest stand. But they wind up wounded, not even dead. Tonight in jungle land.
Love the internet.
Oh yeah, can't get enough.